So we're in a series based on the lectionary. So our whatever is read usually isn't connected to the message. It's just part of the lectionary, and we read the gospel reading every week. But for the next 3-4 weeks, it is going to be the same passage. So what you just heard is the passage for today. And I think that's perfect because we just came from a series where we talked about love is greater than being right, and now the passage is on love. And if you were here a couple weeks ago on Friday for date night at Imago, Charlie talked about the 5 love languages, also about love. So today we are continuing that theme, and we will discuss the passage, maybe one of the more familiar passages of Scripture. Let's read it together. It is on page 804, Matthew 22, 34 to 40. So we'll just read the beginning part, and then I'll open it up for discussion. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question: "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these 2 commandments. So, what have you heard previously about this passage, or what thoughts came to mind? Yeah, so you've heard it talked about, like, that you're right, the first part, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. That comes from the Shema, which the Israelites would have all known by heart. It comes from Deuteronomy 6. Sure. Yeah, maybe he was trying to catch him, and it was all about doing right, and he was like, well, this is actually the core. It's in a string of 3, I think, people are questioning him: Sadducees, Pharisees, and somebody else. Yeah. Yeah, see, all the 10 commandments, I've seen that before, either go in the category of love your neighbor or love God. So, this passage, who has heard of this passage before? Is familiar? Raise your hand if you're not familiar with it before. I don't mean to call you out, I'm just trying to get a bearing. No one? Okay, sorry if I put you on the spot. So, it's pretty common. So in one and the same, like, it's a very difficult passage to preach on because it's like, yeah, you've all heard of this before, probably. I mean, it's the greatest commandment. So if you've heard a number of sermons, hopefully one has been about this. But we all stink at following through on it. So it's also, I guess, to my advantage to draw this passage because I didn't choose it. It's just part of the lectionary. So I thought that was an interesting two-sided challenge for me this week. What I found interesting, or particularly interesting about this passage, was when he says, this is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. I always thought about it, like Ben was pointed out, that there's these 2 things that are important. Loving God with all of your heart, soul, and mind. That's important. And just under that is loving your neighbor as yourself. And so Jesus, like, I've always thought of this passage as like God is saying, or Jesus is saying, this is the most important thing and this is the second most important thing. But I was trying to think about maybe Jesus is saying it's like it as in they're interconnected. They're inseparable. They're related to each other because the best way to love those around you and serve those, the best way to serve God is to serve other people. And as your love for God grows, then your love for other people grows. And so I just found it interesting that maybe, yeah, of course, they're like each other in priority, but I think they're also like each other as in they're highly related. Daniel Bell, I'm reading a book that's really thick, but I really like this part. He says, as Aquinas explains, our love is properly directed toward God, and we love other things, including ourselves, only subsequent to and as a refraction of that love for God. This is to say that our love for ourselves as well as for others is indirect, a consequence or extension of our loving God. We don't love ourselves first and then love God and perhaps our neighbors. Rather, we do not love either ourselves or others properly unless and until we love with a love that is rightly directed toward God. Which goes to prove the point that these are all connected. That God knows the best thing that we can do for ourselves is love him more, because the more we love him, the more we appreciate his character, the more we see the image of God in ourselves, and we see his love for us, and we see the image of God in someone else. That it's all connected to each other, these three aspects. And so I just think that that's really beautiful, that how these two commandments are, you can't do one without the other, that they're so interrelated. So the more you do one, chances are the more you're doing the other. So it's really important to keep tabs on how you're doing in all three of these areas. That if you're struggling with your relationship with God, then you're probably struggling with your relationship with someone else. Or you're probably struggling with your own self-esteem and appreciation of who God made you to be. So I think that's really important. I love this prayer by St. Richard of Chichester. He said this: O most merciful Redeemer, friend and brother, may I know thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, and follow thee more nearly. So this is basically the thesis of my message, that there's this progression between, if the goal is loving God and loving others, you can't love someone you don't know. And so it starts with loving God. And as we love him, as we love him, then our love for others grows. So I think that's really cool, that it just makes sense. If we don't understand his character, then how are we going to appreciate his following him? Or how could we become like him if we don't know who he is? So knowing precedes loving. So obviously you can see this in our relationships with other people as well, but besides just a relationship with God. It's a lot easier to love your kids than someone else's kids. It's a lot easier to love your spouse than someone else's spouse, or, you know, your friends, because you see the good qualities in them. As you get to know them better, you get to cherish them. You get to see what they're made of. You get to see what lightens their face and what, you know, all the good qualities. But other kids are more likely to annoy you. I personally have experienced this. Like, I like my niece and nephew a lot more than I like some other kids or other nieces and nephews. I'm biased, and that's okay, you know? But I know Elijah and Piper really well, so that helps. Same goes for my spouse. Christina, when I first met her, I didn't know anything about her, and I thought, I might like this girl. And I guess I got to know her better, I'm like, I really do like this girl. And now I, you know her better than anyone, and I love her. And it's easier to love when you know somebody. So I also think it's maybe intentional that Jesus chose the word neighbor, because he knows that you can't love someone you don't know. So it would be useless to say, here's what you do in Christian life. You love God with all your heart, and you love everybody else. Like, why didn't Jesus just say, love every single person on the planet? Because he knew that's not realistic. You can only love the people that you know. And so it's smart of Jesus to choose the term neighbor. In the Luke passage that goes with this, that follows the great commandment, someone says, well, who is my neighbor then? And that's when Jesus talks about the Good Samaritan, basically saying everyone that you come into contact with is your neighbor. It's your family, it's your friends, it's your next door neighbor, it's your coworkers, it's people you see. Anyone that you can't just pass someone on the road and say, they're not my neighbor. Like, we are to spread God's love to everyone that we come into contact with. So I think it's intentional that Jesus chooses neighbor. And maybe for a couple other reasons. One, it puts us on equal ground with everyone, that we're not just called to be like, oh, I need to love this person, and I'm just giving, you know, but it's like we're all neighbors to each other, that we have this equal calling, equal worth. And he knows that it's better to love deeply to a few than to expect to love millions and billions of people a little bit. It's like you could give your money to a friend who's struggling, and you could give $100, or you could give 100 people $1, you know, it doesn't make as much sense. So it's better to love deeply and love our neighbor. So until you know them better, your actual neighbors, like next door neighbors, might just be the loud people with a loud car and a squeaky door, and then they have tons of leaves on their yard. But you don't, and if you don't know anything about them, they're just annoying people that are, you just want them to get their leaves off my yard, keep your trash can off my yard. You know, it's like, they're, if you don't know them, they're easy to not really have loving feelings toward. But maybe you spend some time with them and you realize that loud car with no muffler, maybe that's all they can afford right now. You know, and so they, you know, give them a break. Or maybe they don't rake their leaves because they've got five kids that are all under 5 years old. It's like, okay, I have compassion for you because I know more about you now. And I know, like, you aren't just this evil person that is trying to, you know, trespass on my yard. Or if you like your coworkers, I think it's very common to see coworkers as competitors. It's like you're trying to impress your boss over them, or they're competing for your promotion, or you're trying to get, you know, affirmation on some project and you want to be above them. It's a lot easier to see them as a competitor when you don't know anything about them. But if you see them, if you get to know them better, you spend time with them, you ask them questions, you learn their story, then it's easier to feel like, hey, we're partners in this. You know, we're brothers and sisters. You're my neighbor. Or classmates. Like if you're going to school and there's that person that seems like a know-it-all, and every time the teacher's talking and trying to give a lecture, they're raising their hand and interrupting. And it's like, if you don't know anything about them, you just see them as the interrupter. You don't even know their name. They're just the know-it-all. But what if you get to know them and it's like their home life is terrible, and this is their area of life where they thrive. They're good at school and they need that affirmation. You know, it's you feel more compassion for them. Or what about our church family? If you don't know the person next to you in the pew, then they could just be that person that took the last stall in the bathroom. Or they took your favorite coffee mug, and you're like, I should have been here earlier. They took my coffee mug, the one with the pigs on it. Is that anybody's favorite, the pigs one? I think Joe Patterson, who sits over here in first service, likes that one. But, I mean, if you get to know them, you're like, it's a coffee mug. Yeah, you can have it. I don't care. I'll find another one to like. I was thinking about a couple weeks ago, Christina and I went on a date night, and we just went to Starbucks and hung out there. And I ordered my coffee and I ordered water because we're usually there for hours. And so I'm like, you know, I know I'm going to get thirsty, so I'm just going to order my water so I don't have to later order water by itself and then to think I'm just being cheap. So it's like, I earned the water because I'm paying for this coffee. So often they forget to bring me the water or to set it out on the counter. So this happened a couple weeks ago, and they put Christina's coffee out. I handed her, they put my coffee out, and I just stood there holding it, waiting for the water, and the water didn't come. And then I thought, I'm just going to stand here until they recognize they forgot. And so I was kind of like being passive aggressive, and I realized, like, why am I getting upset about them not bringing me water? It's so simple. Like, but I have no clue. I didn't know them. And if knowing precedes loving, it's a lot harder to love them if I don't know their name. They're just this nameless, faceless means to an end. Like, I love water faucets more than I love you right now, because I want water, you know? But if then I go to 30-30, and Ty's here, so I was getting to 30-30. So I go there. And I know Trey and Phil and Ty and Sarah and Jared and these people who serve me my coffee. And I don't remember a time ever thinking, like, Trey, you messed up my order. I'm really mad at you right now. Like, if they mess up my order, which they usually don't, but if they do, I know them. I know their story. They ask me questions. We are in this relationship, so it's a lot easier for me to love them. I feel more patient, more kind, more self-controlled when I know them. So maybe that's what you walk away with today. You already know you're supposed to love your neighbor, but you don't know their names. And so how are you supposed to, it's like you're trying to get to step three when step one is asking them their name, asking them their story, getting to know them better. So whether that's your coworker, or whether that's your cousin, or whether that's some parents that are at your kid's function, maybe that's what you, the first step for you is, just to get to know them better, and the love will come more easily. So another quote that I think demonstrates this progression is this one from Brian McLaren. "The more real God becomes to me, the more brilliant and revolutionary Jesus seems to me. The more precious life becomes to me, and the more warmly I feel toward my neighbors." So I love that in, even in this quote, he's not even talking about this passage, but he's recognizing this progression, that loving is preceding, that knowing, you know God, and then you love him more, and then you're able to follow him more. And so there's this progression where knowing comes first. But that brings me to spiritual practices. Because spiritual practices are the ways that we get to know God better. They're all the different techniques, the methods, the Christian disciplines that have been done throughout history. But what if you feel stuck? You're like, sure, I can mentally assent that that is a true statement. You know God first, and then you can love him more. But what if you're kind of stuck at, I don't know how to know God more? Or all the ways that I used to learn about God have grown stale, or there's weird baggage with them, or I just don't like them anymore. What if every time you go to pray, you think, I'm not doing it right, I don't know how to pray, I don't do it enough, I'm just, you know, you're getting down on yourself. Or what if every time you open your Bible, or you think about reading your Bible, all these thoughts, this all this pressure about, I'm not living right, I'm a sinner, I'm just, you know, it's all this burdensome thoughts. Well, then those practices that once used to be life-giving no longer suffice. And so if you feel like you're stuck, maybe the point is not to give up on spiritual practices altogether, and it's not to just try harder at them, but maybe it's to try differently. Maybe there's spiritual practices you've never done before. I mean, I've seen lists of 22 spiritual practices, and we usually just think about prayer and Bible reading. But there's all sorts of, there's silence, and there's solitude, and there's breath prayer, and there's Lectio Divina, and there's all these things that have, that Christians have done through the ages to connect with God. And chances are you haven't tried all of them. So maybe try differently instead of trying harder. I was meeting with someone a few weeks ago, and she was telling me, like, she feels so guilty that she doesn't read her Bible enough. She probably hasn't read her Bible for like a year, and she knows, like, it's like she wants to read the Bible, but at the same time, she doesn't want to. Because the only thing she hears when she opens her Bible is all the ways she's not living right, all the ways she's wrong. So going back to Charlie's main thread of the past series, if love is greater than being right, and all of your spiritual practices had the goal of being right, well, try to shift the focus to the other side. What if you shifted all your spiritual practices, and instead of the question being, how can I live right, or what how can I be right, what if you shifted all of the questions to, how does this help me love better? How does this passage encourage me to love well? How does singing this song, or praying this prayer, or doing this discipline engage me with God's love? So I told her, this lady I was meeting with, I said, I could tell that she was just, her aim of the scripture was so, like, her filter was so off. It was so clogged that I tried to give her a new filter. I said, read the Gospel of Luke, the book of Luke. Start there. And try reading just one chapter at a time, and the only question you're asking is, what does this say about God? Not, what does this say about how I should live? What does this say about sin? What does this say about loving other people? It's, what does this say about God? So that, just that first step of knowing God a little better. And the other steps come easier. And it was like, she'd never thought of it that before. I thought it was so simple, but she had never thought of just shifting her focus on that one practice. So maybe that's a place to start with spiritual practice, is don't try harder, just try differently. Try something new. we have this transforming community that our church is going through another second round. So it's like a group of 10, 12 people, and it's going to be a two-year program, two-year process where you do a quarterly retreats. And at each retreat, you focus on a different spiritual practice. So maybe that's the step for you. Maybe you need to pick up one of these sheets here that are about the transforming community and email Charlie and say, hi, I'm interested, whether it's this round or whether it's the next round. I haven't experimented with a lot of spiritual practices, and I'd like to. So that's one of your takeaways. But I just encourage you not to give up on spiritual practices altogether and just halt because some of them have gotten stale, because they are time-tested methods to growing spiritually, to knowing God better. So don't give up. Maybe just approach it a little bit differently. Daniel Bell, who I mentioned earlier, he said this: the various disciplines of the Christian life, aka spiritual practices, are means through which the Spirit redirects our desires outward toward God, and so toward the neighbor. As we study Scripture, as we engage in corporate worship, imitate the saints, serve our neighbors in our vocations and in the works of mercy, love our enemies, and so forth, our desire is being drawn out of its self-absorption so that it may flow as it was created to flow, toward God and neighbor in the love that desires communion. So maybe the best thing that you can do for your neighbor or for your family is to try shifting the focus of spiritual practices. Because if spiritual practices are what draw us outward, away from being selfish, and help us in our goal of love, it's worth another shot. So I just wanted to point that out. That could be the key to helping you love better. So where are you in this chart struggling? Where is your love lacking, or do you feel like maybe it isn't jiving fully? Maybe your relationship with God is going great, and you and God are doing well, but you haven't done as much to love your neighbor, or maybe you feel like your relationship with God is going well, but you aren't able to love yourself. That there's things about you that you hate, or your body image, or you always feel guilty about, and you're hard on yourself, and you need to let others love you, and you need to let God show you His love. You need to know that you are lovely and you are loved by God. Maybe that's the first step for you. So where are you? Maybe you sense God's Spirit drawing your attention to one of those areas. So there's this thing that I referenced earlier, the five love languages. And I think maybe there are about 40 or 50 people that came to the date night. And so if some of you may have heard of this 15 years ago, the book's been out for a long time, it's a bestseller. And some of it might be completely fresh to you and you weren't at date night. So I was going to read a summary over each of these because I think they're really insightful on different ways of how to love those you care about. Usually it's applied toward spouses, that kind of relationship. So the first language of love is words of affirmation. Actions don't always speak louder than words. If words of affirmation is your love language, unsolicited compliments mean the world to you. Hearing the words, "I love you," are important. Hearing the reasons behind that love sends your spirit skyward. But insults can leave you shattered and are not easily forgotten. If your love language is acts of service, number two. Can vacuuming the floors really be an expression of love? Absolutely. Anything you do to ease the burden of responsibilities weighing on an acts of service person will speak volumes. The words he or she most wants to hear are, "Let me do that for you." Laziness, broken commitments, and making more work for them tell those with this language their feelings don't matter. Number three, receiving gifts. Don't mistake this love language for materialism. The receiver of gifts thrives on the love, thoughtfulness, and effort behind the gift. If you speak this language, the perfect gift or gesture shows that you are known, you are cared for, and you are prized above whatever was sacrificed to bring the gift to you. But a missed birthday, anniversary, or a hasty, thoughtless gift would be disastrous. So would the absence of everyday gestures. Number four, quality time. And this is my wife's number one. In the vernacular of quality time, nothing says I love you like full, undivided attention. Being there for this type of person is critical, but really being there, with the TV off, fork and knife down, and all chores and tasks on standby, makes your significant other feel truly special and loved. However, distractions, postponed dates, or the failure to listen can be especially hurtful. And finally, physical touch, which is my number one. This language is not all about the bedroom. A person whose primary language is physical touch is, not surprisingly, very touchy. Hugs, pats on the back, holding hands, and thoughtful touches on the arm, shoulder, or face. They can all be ways to show excitement, concern, care, and love. Physical presence and accessibility are also crucial to someone that values physical touch. So maybe you see in there, as I was reading, like, you resonated with one more than the others, or you thought, yes, I feel especially loved when I get a note in the mail. When that's words of affirmation, when I feel affirmed, that is me. Or maybe you feel like, yes, when Dustin gives me a hug, or even when Dustin talks about giving hugs in front of everybody, then I feel like he's a warm person because I value physical touch. Or maybe you're like my wife, Christina, and last night when we went on a walk because it was so bright and sunny and nice, she was like, her love tank was full. Because I was speaking her language, and I knew when she asked me, would you like to go on a walk, that was why. She wanted time with me. So the interesting thing is these love languages, they're usually focused on spousal relationships, but they also have five love languages of singles, I think, and five love languages of children, that they've realized that these five languages are very prominent avenues of love in how you feel loved and also how you express love. But sometimes fights can happen, especially in marriages, if you're giving love in this one area, but they're not really receiving that one because it's actually this area you need to be giving the love in. You're not speaking their language. So if you're speaking different languages, then it doesn't feel like you're winning. So it's usually directed toward other people. Why can't we just apply this to our relationship with God? It's interesting because I was thinking through what spiritual practices fit in these different areas. And it really is like there are different ways to express our love to God, and I think the ways he expresses his love to us. But I think even more so with our neighbor, that what does it look like to love in these ways? Well, maybe you're great at spending time with your friends. You're always around them. You value that time, and that's your love language. But you've never given them a birthday card. You never said, hey, I appreciate you. Happy birthday. I was thinking about you. And if they're a words of affirmation person, that would mean more to them than 3 hours of time hanging out. Or maybe you give generously to our church, and that's giving is part of your love language. And your gifts help to fund our breakfast. But it might mean more to the people who are Breakfast Club guests if you're serving at the breakfast. And maybe if you've never tried that, that would be an avenue to show love of quality time and spending time with our guests. Or maybe your neighbor is the one with the yard full of leaves, and you raked their leaves because you were trying to be nice. And so that was an act of service that you did. But if you don't know their name or if you don't talk with them, they probably would have rather you've taken 1 minute to get out of your car slowly and walk over to their porch and say, hey, how's it going? What are you up to? And that time would have meant more than the act of service. Or maybe you're really great at telling your coworkers, hey, you did a great job on this project, or I really liked what you did here, I appreciate this about you. You're giving them words of affirmation, but maybe you've never given them a pat on the back or given them a hug or a handshake. And if they're a physical touch person, they're going to feel a lot more affirmed if you say good job and then you put your hand around their shoulder. So try to push past what your normal language is and think about the lens through what's their language. If I write them a birthday card and they're like ecstatic about it and they come and thank me like three times, chances are they're probably a words of affirmation person. So maybe that's the step that you take. Some of you just need to take a step in knowing someone better, but maybe I think all of us could stand to try a little bit harder at loving our neighbor, but maybe some of you are trying really genuinely hard to know the people around you, to love them, but you're speaking a different language of love. And so maybe for you, it's changing what love language you're speaking to them and trying to add some variety in there. I was reading another book, and I just thought this fits so well with this passage. Jenny Allen, she wrote a book called Cold Tangerines, and she describes friendship in this way, which I really think. When she says friendship, insert loving your neighbor, because I think it's brilliant. She says this: friendship is acting out God's love for people in tangible ways. We were made to represent the love of God in each other's lives so that each person we walk through life with has a more profound sense of God's love for them. Friendship is an opportunity to act on God's behalf in the lives of people that we're close to, reminding each other of who God is. When we do the hard, intimate work of friendship, we bring a little more of the divine into daily life. We get to remind one another about the bigger, more beautiful picture that we can't always see from where we are. I love that so much, I'm going to read it a second time. And I especially love the word opportunity. Friendship is acting out God's love for people in tangible ways. Sounds like the five love languages to me. We were made to represent the love of God in each other's lives so that each person we walk through life with has a more profound sense of God's love for them. Friendship is an opportunity to act on God's behalf in the lives of people that we're close to, reminding each other of who God is. When we do the hard, intimate work of friendship, we bring a little more of the divine into daily life. We get to remind one another about the bigger, more beautiful picture that we can't always see from where we are. I just think that's so true. And I think the part of what's brilliant about these two commandments is that the better you become at loving, the less of a burden it feels like, and the more it feels like an opportunity. The more we practice, the more we come to know the people around us and try to know God better and then love more, it becomes easier and easier. And it, as the previous quote said, we get pulled out of self-absorption and are more able to focus on other people. And instead of what pleases us only being taking care of our needs and wants, our love for other people compels us to meet other people's needs and to help them and show kindness to them. And so if they're happy, we're just as happy. And I think that's a beautiful part of loving more, is the more we love, the more we're motivated to see other people experience God's goodness and for them to see themselves in the image of God. So, to recap, where is your love lacking the most? And just what's one way to improve? Loving better is a journey. And I definitely don't want you to feel like I'm terrible at this and get back into that cycle of getting down on yourself. What's one thing that you could do to change your love, either for yourself and your own self-esteem and getting to a healthier spot in your own heart so that you can pour out, or in your relationship with God and trying out some new practices, or trying some of the old practices that have gotten stale a little with a different approach, or in trying to get to know the people around you better, your next door neighbors, your coworkers, your cousins, other parents that you come into contact with, or people at school. So where would you like to improve? I'll give us a minute of silence to reflect on these questions, and then I'll benedict us.